The cursor was a rhythmic, pulsing taunt against the white void of my Outlook calendar. No subject line. No agenda. No digital footprint of his assistant, the woman who usually guarded his time like a high-end concierge. Just a 30-minute block of dead space at 4:30 p.m. on a Friday, carved out by the COO himself. The office was already beginning to exhale, that low-frequency hum of people mentally checking out for the weekend, but my chest felt like it was being constricted by a zip tie. I walked past the rows of glass-walled huddles, my heels clicking with a frantic, uneven syncopation on the polished concrete. The smell of the office in the late afternoon always reminded me of ozone and stale, expensive coffee, a sterile scent that suddenly felt suffocating. I reached the heavy oak door of the corner office, the one that didn't have a glass partition, the one that felt like a vault. I didn't knock. I just turned the handle, my palm slightly damp against the cool metal, and stepped into a room where the air was 5 degrees colder and smelled faintly of sandalwood and old money. He didn't look up from his monitor immediately. He sat there, silhouetted against the floor-to-ceiling view of the city, a silver-haired architect of corporate restructuring who moved people around like plastic tokens on a board. "Sit down, Elena," he said, his voice a low, resonant gravel that didn't request so much as command. He finally looked at me, his eyes two chips of flint that seemed to be calculating my market value in real time. I sat in the leather chair, the one that always felt like it was designed to make you feel small, and I waited for the spreadsheet, the missed KPI, the reason for this ghost meeting. But there was no laptop open between us. There were no printed reports. There was just him, leaning back, lacing his fingers together in a way that felt entirely too casual for a man who had fired 40 people the previous quarter without blinking. He started with the numbers, but they weren't the numbers I expected. He asked about my efficiency, but the way he framed it was surgical, asking how much of my personal life I had sacrificed to hit the Q3 targets, phrasing it like he was looking for a leak in a pressurized pipe. He asked if I felt that my current trajectory was hindered by any domestic obligations, his tone shifting into a key that made my skin prickle. It wasn't HR speak. It was a probe. He leaned forward, the light catching the gold of his watch, and asked me what I valued more, security or the thrill of the climb. He talked about the firm not as a workplace but as a closed ecosystem where only the most adaptable survived, his questions becoming more intimate, more intrusive, yet delivered with the clinical detachment of a forensic auditor. He wanted to know about my last relationship, not out of curiosity, but as if he were checking my references for emotional stability. He asked how I handled betrayal, his gaze never leaving mine, forcing me to hold the stare until my eyes burned. The room felt smaller then. The shadows from the skyscrapers outside were stretching across the mahogany desk like long, dark fingers. He told me that most people in this building were ghosts, just drifting through the halls waiting for a paycheck. But he saw a specific kind of hunger in me, a restlessness that he found useful. He asked if I was capable of keeping secrets that didn't belong to me, his voice dropping an octave, becoming a conspiratorial whisper that felt like a physical touch. He described a scenario, purely hypothetical, he claimed, where the board was being misled about the merger's true valuation, and he asked me, with a chillingly straight face, what price I put on my own silence. It wasn't a bribe, it was a character assessment. He was measuring the depth of my ambition by seeing how much of my integrity I was willing to trade for a seat at the table. I felt the panic rising, a cold tide in my throat, but I kept my face a mask of professional neutrality. My heart was a frantic bird, trapped in my ribs, but I answered him in his own language, using his own cold, transactional logic. I told him that I was a high-yield asset, and that I understood the necessity of discretion in high-stakes environments. I watched his expression, looking for a crack, a sign that this was a test I was failing, but he remained unreadable. He asked me what I would do if I discovered he was the one holding the smoking gun. And for a second, the silence in the room was so heavy I thought the windows might shatter from the pressure. I told him I'd make sure the gun was cleaned and put away before anyone else saw it, and for the first time a ghost of a smile touched his lips, a thin predatory curve that didn't reach his eyes. He didn't say another word about work. He stood up, walked to the window, and looked out at the grid of the city, his back to me. He told me I could go, that the meeting was over, and that I should enjoy my weekend because things were about to become very busy. There was no handshake, no good job, just a dismissal that felt like an induction into something dark and nameless. I walked out of that office, the heavy door clicking shut behind me with a finality that made my stomach flip. The hallway was empty now, the cleaning crews starting their rounds, their vacuums humming in the distance like a low-grade alarm. I walked toward the elevators, my legs feeling heavy, my mind a chaotic loop of every question he had asked, every word I had let slip. I reached the lobby and stepped out into the humid evening air, the noise of the city hitting me like a physical blow. I stood on the sidewalk for a long time, watching the sea of suits and commuters rushing toward the subway, all of them oblivious to the fact that the world had just shifted on its axis for me. I didn't feel like I had won. I didn't feel like I had lost. I felt like I had been weighed, measured, and found useful in a way that made me want to scrub my skin raw. I looked up at the darkened windows of the top floor, wondering if he was still standing there, watching me blend into the crowd, knowing that he now owned a piece of me that I hadn't even known was for sale. The invite had no subject line, but the message was louder than any email could ever be. I had stepped into the vault, and when the door closed, I realized I hadn't just passed a test. I had signed a contract written in the dark, and there was no way to HR my way out of the life I had just invited in.